Water Podcast.
Everybody.
Hey guys.
Jesus, episode 3 already. We are on a run here, Chance. Huh? What do you think?
It's awesome, man. Let's keep it going.
It's funny, huh? And our technology gets better and better.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we have 2 more lights. We have 1 more angle camera. So we're getting better and better and more professional over here at the Planet Water, the H&O podcast with Chance and Martin.
It's starting to look like Warner Brothers in here.
Yes. My wife goes nuts every day now. She's like, oh my God, Martin, what are you doing to my living room? And it's getting a little bit out of control. But I promised her I will always put everything away after the podcast, and I will build it up every day after before we're starting the podcast. So we are golden now. My marriage is still safe. But I have to be very careful, obviously, what I'm doing to our beautiful living room here.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I have to say, Ed, we had so much fun on the last episode, huh? With Stefan Juhling.
That was mind-blowing. That was crazy.
It was fascinating. Yeah. And I want to say thanks again to Stefan, who came over, and we had this amazing wines, and we had the great waters right next to us. And it was so much fun to drink all the different types of waters and compare them to wine. And I was blown away how different some waters tasted in comparison to the wines. Huh? Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chance?
Yeah, it was really cool. It'd be really interesting to get somebody in that might have a scientific perspective on how the different mineralities actually affect the taste when you're like trying different things like food and wine. Yeah. But yeah, it was crazy that like the skill to like enhance the flavor of that Pinot Gris, like it enhanced that caramel taste, which was crazy. Like I had no idea that we'd do something like
that. I completely agree with you. It was fascinating for me as well. But here again, we want to showcase a little bit of pictures of people who showed us stuff. And we received, again, a lot of emails. And please, again, guys, when people sending us stuff over, please do so at planetwaterpodcast@gmail.com. And don't be upset when we don't showcase right away your picture. We're trying always to select some pictures, and then the next pictures will be becoming in the next episodes. Mm-hmm. But these times we received a great email from Briar Manuel. Thank you for participating in our little like picture game here. And she has a very interesting story, Chance, huh? What is she doing?
She's a water engineer, right?
That is so cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I love this. And they said, saw that you are looking for mummies to send in photos to your next podcast. Obviously, we're still here with I feel sometimes we are like related now to your mom's house podcast.
I know, right?
Because we're getting all these amazing emails from the fans of your mom's house podcast with Tom Segura and Christina Pasewski. And it's always fun to see all the love what still the Your Mom's House podcast gives us. And she obviously is a mummy from the Western Water Association. And they're sitting in British Columbia, huh?
Yeah, they're drilling a groundwater supply there.
That's great. So, and there's an amazing picture of her where she's drawing and giving beautiful water to other people. And I love this. This is a very, very cool picture. And when people watching us on YouTube, you can see the pictures. For the people who are listening in on all the other devices, please check us out on YouTube and give us your thumb up right there. So thanks again, Briar, for this amazing picture. Then we have a picture from Bill Patton. First of all, Martin, I just want to say my brother showed me your appearance on Your Mom's House podcast. I watched at least 4 or 5 times, and it's absolutely changed how I look at water and hydration. I didn't want your segment to end. Thank you. And then they sent us a very, very cool picture of them both drinking Perrier and Pellegrino from the proper glassware. This is great. I love that picture, guys. This is amazing.
They actually have a glass company that they've already founded, right? Do they have a link to that?
So next, I do produce development for a German-owned glass company based in owned Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania, the former cut glass mecca of southern of Southern called Rolf Glass. That is very interesting.
Yeah, we produced RolfGlass.com, so check him out if you guys have a chance.
Yeah, that is cool. We produced the piece shown in the photos I've attached. If you'd ever been interested, I love to work with you and do some signature water glass. That's a great idea.
There's actually a big story in Pennsylvania right now. In Pittsburgh, there was a water main break, actually. So like 8 neighborhoods there, they're telling everybody that they need to boil their water for at least a minute before consuming it. Because when there's a main break, it lowers the water pressure. And when the water pressure is low, that creates an environment so that bacteria and stuff can actually build up there. So when it's fast and the pressure is normal, bacteria can't grow. But since there's that main break, they're like telling everybody to boil water, and people who can't, they're like bringing like crates of water bottles out and stuff to people. So that's
very interesting. That's very interesting. It's very scary, obviously, for people who are living in that area, and please boil your water then at that point.
Yeah.
In my opinion, maybe you want to go to the grocery store as well and be the bedsafe and take some bottled water, because then you know there nothing can happen to this. But again, like, thank you so much for this amazing picture. And then Terry Wallman sent us a great picture in as well. And Terry, Chance, you will see Terry coming along to Patina on New Year's Eve, because
no
he
way.
Is one of the musicians. He always plays on New Year's Eve at Patina Restaurant.
Oh, that's amazing.
So
awesome.
I love that Terry Wallman checked out our page. Please visit him at terrywallman.com. And he really plays beautiful, great music. And he will entertain our guest at New Year's Eve. So Terry, thank you so much. Thank you really much for this amazing picture of you. And I'm looking forward to have you in 1.5 weeks, huh?
Yeah,
and
same.
It's already New Year's Eve. Crazy.
Can't wait.
That's nuts. And then Bradford Imson, nice picture. Martin, I had one of your interviews to thank me for seeking this water out. Lucky for me, I randomly went into La Grande Epirique in Paris. Well, Paris, huh? And stumbled upon their gigantic wall of waters. Saw this, had to buy one, and chill it in an ice bucket. Cleanest water I ever tasted, so thank you for the tip, my friend. Think I'm nuts. Hey, Brad. We don't think you're nuts. This picture is amazing. This is
next level.
Yeah, this is the Berg water from Canada, what we have at Patina. And this is a great water. So very, very nice job. And I love the ice bucket feeling in the background with the serviette. And then the Berg water right in front of it from Canada. So thank you again for everybody who pulled us and gave us some pictures. That is very, very cool from you guys. And we wanted to showcase one more thing before we're having a very special guest today. It's Michael Mascher from the Fine Water Society. And I wanted to showcase first his homepage before we will actually talk to Michael today. And please visit him at finewaters.com. He's the founder of the Fine Water Society. And there's an amazing, great homepage on, again, finewaters.com. And you can check him out right there. And it's very interesting to discover all the beauty about the different waters. You can go right here to the different countries. Let's go, for example, to Germany, where I'm coming from. And then there are different waters categorized, a little story about the water consumption in Germany, and then all the different springs, what comes in Germany.
Wow, look at that.
Look at this. Over 500 different springs coming from Germany. So it's a great site to, when you're thirsty for a little bit more interesting waters, check them out. And we will have Michael shortly here on the podcast.
Can't wait.
It's on part 2 about this Planet Water, the H&O podcast. Right behind Chance, you see maybe our new sign, Planet Water. And we will let always our people who are in the studio then with us sign this sheet or sign this sign. So this will be a lot of fun as well. Hopefully we will have a lot of people. I heard some very interesting people coming to the show. I don't want to already tell you who is coming, spoil anything, but mummies, you will be very happy. Just to give you the heads up right there. So we will have some very interesting people coming to the show. We will have several comedians coming to the show, because it's always fun to have some talk with comedians. And we are really looking forward to have all this kind of interesting people coming to our beautiful Planet Water, the H&O podcast. And Chance, what are we going to do now? Let's get Michael over FaceTime, I think.
Let's do it.
Let's dial him in. Welcome to Planet Water podcast, Episode 3, Chance, it's part 2 of the episode 3 because we just taped a little bit already beforehand. And now we have our special guest, and I'm very, very happy to introduce Michael Mascher from Fine Waters to everybody. And thank you so much, Michael, for being here via FaceTime. I love technology, and I think it's amazing that we can do this here.
Thank you very much for having me. Of course, I would love to be there in your studio and share some water with you, but this is probably the next best thing, and I agree with the technology. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm always saying water should not be a dry topic, so I think we should drink some water. And next time you're in town, Michael, please stop by here at the Planet Water headquarters. And we are more than happy to have you here in the studio. And I think that would be great to taste live some waters with you. But
absolutely.
Still, I think it's amazing that we have you on the show. And the first question, obviously, we wanted to ask you, Michael, why water? Why water?
So it's, for me, it's a personal story. And for the longest time in my life, I have not paid any attention to water because I was very much focused on wine and, you know, had a huge wine collection. And one day I didn't feel too well, went to the doctor. He did an EKG, and I'm not a specialist, but I could tell this is not good.
Okay.
So a little bit later, I'm in the hospital, and I had now a cardiologist, which I never had before. And he told me that I could either live or continue to drink alcohol.
Okay, that's an interesting choice.
I hesitated because Krug just declared a vintage and I ordered one of the cases. So I was looking.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh God.
Oh. I feel with you right now. We had episode.
So it was a difficult choice to say the least.
You know, Michael, we had episode 2 just taped with Stefan Juling, and we tasted all these amazing white wines and red wines from Germany. And I was blown away how different the tastes were between the wines and obviously in comparison to water. So I totally feel you that this is a hard task to do in your life. It's definitely a changing subject, huh?
Yeah, but the way I see it now, it's only hard if you have a choice. If you don't have a choice, it's not very hard because you need to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard, but it was also not hard. But what it allowed me to do is, and you know, we're drinking wine not to get drunk. There are much better ways. There's the vodka in the freezer for that. But we enjoy discovering new things. We enjoy sharing with friends and all this Epicurean context. And now this wine bottle was removed from my table. And I looked at the other bottle on the table, which is, of course, a bottle of water. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, man, can we apply my curiosity now to the water instead of the wine? Mm. And that opened up a completely new world for me in 2002.
I love this. So it was in 2002.
2002.
So what happened from that point? So you understand, okay, you said to yourself, okay, there is no more wine for me. I want now obviously discover the beauty of water. Did you already knew water had so much different taste profiles, or you were just surprised suddenly because you were forced to introduce yourself to water?
Yeah, I would love to say I always deeply cared about water, but I did not. Hmm. So the wine and the much larger set of data points for the wine totally overwhelmed my senses. And only once you removed the wine and the other spirits from my life, I started discovering the water. So for me, the whole thing started in 2002 with that discovery.
And where were you living in 2002? You were in the States already? Because I think our listeners can hear right away, obviously I have an accent. Somehow you have an accent. And chances here, the only guy who doesn't have an accent. So, so it's almost like it's called like the Planet Water European show almost, because we always have these European people now on the show. So tell me where you're from.
We both have the official accent of the bottled water industry, right, which is a German accent.
Yeah.
So I'm originally from Austria, and I actually lived in Los Angeles
at that time.
And had a technology company. And it's also a very nice connection I have with you here, is that our favorite restaurant back then was the old Small Patina, where Joachim still was standing in the kitchen. Mm. And this is where we spent most of our money on wine.
I like that. So in 2002, you discovered, obviously, okay, now I need to change my life and I want to drink more and more water. How was the availability even for different waters at that moment in 2002? Because I'm still struggling and we're getting all the emails in every day for people like, please, Martin, let us know where we can buy all these amazing waters around the world. But it's very, very hard, I think, to get them. So in 2002, let me know, like, how difficult it was it for you to actually find different waters?
Yeah, it was really difficult. And the selection was much, much smaller. But very fortunate, you know, we traveled many times to Europe. And at that moment, you have access to a much, much wider variety. So yeah, having this European background and now having the recollection of how many waters you had available in Europe, you know, dramatically helped with that. If I would have done this only in the US, I would have had a really very hard time. But the European connection really made it possible to access many waters from many different countries.
And was this then the idea of what you had to understand? Like, okay, I want to have that access, what you, the European market has here in the States. Maybe I need to bring then the waters over to the States? Or how did you realize I need to do something a little bit more than just drinking water when you're in a restaurant?
Mm-hmm. So I started Find Waters, you know, the website and this whole idea around the concept. And I was with friends in a restaurant, and it was actually Patina, I have to say. And I could not drink wine. And all my friends were drinking wine. They all had the Riedel Sommelier glasses. And I could only drink water. And my choice was still in sparkling. Mm-hmm. And I got one of those small blue tumblers that Patina was using back then. Mm-hmm. And then we toasted and it made this horrible sound.
Bonk.
This very fine sommelier.
Yeah, this bonk.
Bonk. Yeah. And I felt like a child. I felt like I'm not participating in the Epicurean experience because of my handicap with having this ugly glass and no choice.
Really? You feel excluded almost.
Excluded, exactly. So what I wanted to do is very selfishly get all the restaurants where I want to go to have a water menu and some nice glasses so I can enjoy going out with people that drink wine and have the same experience. So very selfish if you think about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think, and it's a nice way to say it, it's selfish because, and it really fits, I think, the topic. Because first, maybe it was the same for me as a water sommelier. I was very selfish as a child to realize the water has taste and discovered all the different tap waters in Europe on vacation time. And that was very selfish for me because I didn't care if my parents cared about it. For me, it was like I was blown away about it and I loved it. And then at one point, the guest came up to me in my restaurant and said, "Hey, Martin, why you don't have a water menu? Because water has taste." And I totally agreed with him. And that's the reason I created the water menus, because I wanted then to give back my fascination about water to other people. So it started as a selfish project for me as well, a little bit earlier in my life. But I totally understand what you're coming from, Michael. So tell me a little bit about the Find Water Society, because a lot of people maybe are not familiar with this. Obviously, I'm very familiar with this because I'm part of this, and I eager everybody to look up the homepage, findwaters.com, to check it out, and we will blow it up on our screen here as well at one point, because it's really fascinating, and you can discover so much what you can see about the topic of water. And Michael, I have to thank you, or I cannot even thank you enough every day, what you're doing for the water industry here in the States and even in the whole world. So tell us a little bit about the Find Water Society.
So I'm very fortunate because I'm in touch with many, many small, very passionate brands from around the world. And the keyword here is small. Those are people that not think in spreadsheets, market shares, and just making money. They're thinking on sharing something they have, which is their source, with people. Mm-hmm. And those people live in remote places from Greenland to Patagonia, in Europe, in the US, in China for that matter.
Yeah.
But they are all very small. So what we've tried to do with Find Waters and the Find Water Society, give the small brands a forum, a hub, where they can showcase their waters to a much larger audience. You know, you talked about how difficult it was to get the waters and still is. For the small brands, it's almost impossible to get visibility and to find what the society allows all the small little brands to get together and stand up to the big multinationals that really have completely overtaken the bottled water in the restaurants, and your choice is still in sparkling. So the fine water society is the antidote to still in sparkling in the restaurant.
I love this. We said this several times on the podcast already, and I said it to Chance. It's like, I hate this when I'm going to a restaurant and they just, and the server comes to me and first of all, the worst thing is obviously in Los Angeles when they're pouring you right away tap water with ice and lemon. That's for me with already ice, like, I'm already having the first heart attack right there. And we're always saying to the server, said, please, we do not drink tap water. And they're looking at us like we are aliens. It's like, why are you not drinking tap water? Are you nuts or what? You think, yeah, I'm not really, I'm not so into a highly acidic, highly processed chlorine water.
Yeah.
It's not my water of choice at that moment. I already left even restaurants just for that reason. When they could not give me any bottled water what I preferred and they just had purified or tap water, you think, I'm so sorry, I don't want to drink today, but I don't want to drink a highly processed soda or tap water. I'm sorry, what else shall I drink? Mm-hmm. What else is my choice? And my choice is nothing. Then I think, in my opinion, you lost me as a guest. I'm so sorry. And they have to feel it. And I will always tell them, you think, you don't have real water? And I had somebody from Coca-Cola last time in the restaurant. He was so proud. Oh, yeah, and this is... And he was introduced to me like, oh, and this is our water sommelier. And he's like, oh, that's very interesting. And he was like from Atlanta, some high up from Coca-Cola. Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, that's very interesting. And I told him, it's too sad that Coca-Cola doesn't own any water. And they're like, what did that mean? Yeah, sure, we have water. He's like, no, you don't have water.
Oh, boy.
No, we have smart water and we have Dasani. He's like, yeah, that's not water. And he looked at me like he didn't know what I'm even saying to him right now. He's saying, yeah, but purified water is not water, sir. It's like, no. You need to have some spring waters. Then we can talk a little bit about it. Now they obviously purchased Topo Chico. We all know this. And I think, Michael, you know this very well because you're living in Texas. And Topo Chico, I think, is very famous in Texas, huh?
Yeah, it really caught fire in especially Austin amongst the hipsters. So it's now a really, really hip thing to drink your vodka lemon with Topo Chico.
So funny.
That's not a drink.
Yeah, and Coca-Cola saw that opportunity and pushed it for $220 million, what they bought Topo Chico for, I think, 3 months ago now, two or three months ago. Yeah, crazy. So you can the bottled water industry is very hot.
Yeah, but again, you see that Coca-Cola doesn't provide any leadership. They just come in with marketing muscles because the trend of Topo Chico was established, you know, 3-4 years ago. They started very small, had very, you know, passionate people that pushed the, and a good product with a good idea. But when Coca-Cola came in, they came in at the tip of the market. So again, no innovation with the big guys, the innovation is with the small guys.
Sure.
And then the big guys coming in.
Sure, but this is like, we see this, and I think in technology in general, we see it with other corporations that small corporations will be bought off then by bigger corporations because at one point the smaller corporation might be a threat to them because they are so innovative. Yeah. But the problem is, I think what I always see when a big corporation bosses a smaller corporation, the fun will disappear a little bit of that product and the innovation will disappear because now they have to tell their superiors all the time and ask for approval.
Exactly.
A smaller corporation can way faster react to the market.
Yeah, they're much more nimble.
Correct,
when it comes
nimble,
to making big decisions.
And has a little bit more fun to it.
Yeah.
And can risk a little bit more fun because they don't have to lose so much. And this is always what scares me.
It's also not a design by committee where you have 12 different committees designing something. You know, I'm talking to the brand owners of a small brand, and you talk to Jan Bender from his guild, and he makes the final decision, you know, and that's quick.
Correct.
So, yes, much more nimble. And that's why I have so much fun working with the small brands. And that's why it's, for me, sometimes very difficult, and maybe for you as well, to work with the big brands. Because with Nestle and those guys, you talk to the representatives. They're nice people, but they don't care about the product. For them, it's spreadsheets and market share and profit margins.
Yeah, and so And I completely agree with you, Mike. And I think the biggest problem sometimes is to let them understand, you think, okay, I think this and this is might be a good product, but the problem is, sir, I cannot purchase 20,000 cases per year because I have a water menu and I want to treat every single brand what I have on this water menu equally, and I want to give every single water a choice on that water menu, so I will not push any waters. that's for me not interesting. This the whole concept is over when I would just sell this one brand or the other brand. It's that's the whole idea about the water menu, to give selections, to give options to your guests, and this is the beauty about it. So Michael, you said 2002 you had this selfish idea of stopping drinking alcohol to survive on this beautiful planet what we have. When did you start Fine Waters? When was that?
It was in 2002, a couple of months later. I had to do something. It was a couple of months later. And then, as you can imagine, for the next 4 or 5 years, I didn't do any podcasts, interviews, or media appearances because, you know, I was really far, far out there. And most people, when they heard about it through the website, mostly ridiculed the idea of water being could be considered as wine. So it took a very, very long time. It was very frustrating at the beginning. And when you talk to journalists, all they wanted to do is prove that water has no taste, water is all the same. And I think you had this at the beginning too, when they tried to set you up with, you know, making a mistake and not tasting the right thing and trying to give you toilet water and all those kind of stupid things.
But you're absolutely right. But I think it's amazing what happened in the last 4 or 5 years now here, especially in America, because the European market was always eager to drink different waters. Even in Germany, we have 500 different mineral water brands. And we just talk about mineral water brands. We're not even talking about purified water. And I was just recently in Germany in September, and I went to the grocery store, to just a regular grocery store in the aisle there, and they had, I think, 25 different mineral water springs, waters from around Germany, just German brands. Then they had a couple of international brands, and then purified water, not even one. Not even one purified water. The only purified water what I actually know in Germany is Bon Aqua. And Bon Aqua is owned by Coca-Cola. Yeah. And you can buy it in some stores, but it's mostly obviously on the fountains, like on the Coca-Cola fountains.
Why do you think there's that large difference between Europe and the US as far as naturally occurring water selection?
Michael, you want to take that question?
I think it's a very deep question and maybe it justifies another podcast. But I think the root lies in the fact that in Europe, people engage with their food, they enjoy food. And there's a very strong trend in the US that food is something that needs to be scientifically approached and something that you need to be careful with. You know, don't eat this, don't eat this, don't eat this. So this whole idea of having purified water or distilled water, I mean, there are some brands that distill the water for you and sell it to you. Then you go to the supermarket, you buy distilled water, and you take your mineral supplement pill and swallow it down with the distilled water.
This is so nuts.
Yeah, I was actually, this is somewhat similar. So for refined grains like white flour and stuff, people wonder why they're enriched. Well, back in the day, it was whole grain breads were more common because processed white breads were much harder to make, but then they had different mills that were able to do it efficiently, and you produce this white flour that tastes better, it's easier to cook and consume, and it lasts forever. But then all of a sudden people start getting all of these medical issues and problems, and they start realizing all the stuff they're stripping away from the grain was actually containing all of these minerals and vitamins and stuff, and they basically reverse engineered it where they just strip all that stuff away and then add it back to the white flour and like supplements and stuff. So yeah, it's like Americans are obsessed with reverse engineering the process, and then they figure out there's actually something there that's important, then put it back in.
But I think we see it on the purified water market right now here in America, because everybody knows that electrolytes are very important for you, but then obviously a distilled water does not have any electrolytes anymore in it. So the purified water companies thought, okay, somehow we need to market ourselves. And they're putting now back on electrolytes added, and then very small amounts for taste, because they cannot put any beneficial claims to it, because the amounts of electrolytes and minerals what they're backing in is like this.
Minuscule.
It's like it's municipal. It's like almost
lower
not
lower than tap, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. The tap water in Los Angeles has 10 times more electrolytes than purified water companies provides. And this is the crazy thing, and I just did a post on Instagram where I said this again, and it has clicked 1,600 times already in my Instagram story, where I said, like, guys, purified water is nothing else than the fast food of beverages. This is nothing else but this. And I know that, Michael, you completely agree with me, and you're so aligned with me about the purified water companies. And in my opinion, not tap water is a threat for bottled water, nothing at all. Purified water companies making my life as a water sommelier very hard, because a lot of people still think, oh, it's all tap, so yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But that there are so many amazing, beautiful springs around the world, it's fascinating. It's really, really fascinating. So, Michael, we talked a little bit about the Fine Water Society, and we talked a little bit about your homepage. It would interest me, like, when maybe people listening in right now who have a water company, how can they contact you? How they can get on your page? How can they get spread the words?
I think the easiest is really there's a lot of contact information for Facebook, email, Instagram is now very popular. So just drop me a line. I would love to learn about new springs, small companies. You know, we can provide visibility. And I think it's something that's very close to both of our hearts is the idea there is no best water.
Correct.
It's the idea that water has very unique characteristics, and the brands need to focus on the characteristics of their water,
yes.
Not telling the world they have the best water.
Yeah.
If there were 100 bottled waters that tell you the best water in the world, the consumer says it's all bullshit because it's meaningless, right?
Mm-hmm.
Saying you have the best water is totally meaningless. Saying you have a water with a very high magnesium level or a very low TDS or very high TDS makes sense. And the second you do that, you can allow other brands next to you because you're not competing with them.
Mm-hmm.
A white wine person will never be jealous of a red wine person.
Correct.
Because
Correct.
It's a totally different thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you don't see that silly thing, I have the best wine in the wine industry because it's much more mature.
Yeah, everybody will laugh about you. Mm-hmm. Huh?
Like yeah, exactly.
No, I like this, and I think this is absolutely right. But still, when you're saying, Michael, there is no best water, I've been a judge on the Fine Water Society competition, and we're giving out, obviously, gold, silver, and bronze medals to water companies. So is it not the opposite what you're trying to do, or is it the same? And so explain me this a little bit, the concept, because I think this would interest me, because we all know about Berkeley Springs, and Berkeley Springs, this every year, this big competition. And what is the difference between Berkeley Springs and the Fine Water Society competition?
Okay, so you notice if you go to the website, I'm not attaching numbers like, you know, people do in the wine industry with the point rating from, mm-hmm. you know, 80 to 100, because I thought that's impossible. And for the longest time, I really resisted the idea of having water competitions.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, when a couple of years ago, 5-6 years ago, when the water had its resurgence, people started doing water competitions.
Yeah.
And it was usually 2 toilet water, 1 tap water, and 3 randomly selected bottles from the shelf.
Sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
But what people did is they published this.
Yeah.
There were some journalists, some pretty girl, and another guy, and they were suddenly water experts, and they judge the water.
Mm.
And you know what happens, like with the wine. If people only drink Oberoak Chardonnay in California, and you give them a white Burgundy for a $300 bottle, they will prefer the Oberoak Chardonnay,
yeah, sure.
because that's what they're drinking on a daily basis.
Yeah. But they're used to.
They're used to. So what you have is, this was not a real competition. This was a publicity nightmare for the real bottled water industry because you had this many, many competitions.
Mm.
And Berkeley Springs, unfortunately, you know, the guy's probably trying to run me over in the truck if he sees me, but he's doing the same.
Oh my God. He's hopefully not waterboarding you, Michael.
He's doing exactly the same thing. So number one, so what we did was a reaction to that and said, you know, okay, if the public wants those kind of water tasting, let's do it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it right. And you have been a judge, you know, for the last 2 times there. You know, we have now categories. We have low minerality, medium, high minerality. We have sparkling. We have naturally carbonated waters. So we have many different categories. So which would be akin to, let's say, you have a Syrah tasting in the wine industry. And you would never have a wine tasting where you have every red wine ever available in one place or bought at a supermarket.
Yeah.
So we're trying to do that. So I know there's a little bit of best water, not best water, but in general, I think it's a reaction towards market forces. And it's a really nice way of getting the industry together, getting visibility, getting you to China and enjoying a week in China, engaging with people. So that's the idea behind the tasting.
I love the idea. And I think it's great what you just said, Michael, because that is a problem what sometimes people still think, oh, it's all the same. So water competitions, it's okay to judge a purified water right next to a spring water, right next to a sparkling water, right next to a water with extremely high TDS of maybe 7,000, like a Roy, versus a water what comes from a glacier like Svalbardi with a TDS of under 20. So to put them both in the same category and taste them side by side, this might be interesting for your taste panel, because it will be so crazy offsetting it.
But it's not a fair comparison.
It's completely not a fair comparison. It would be the same what Michael just said and what I totally believe as well. Nobody would come up with an idea to say, hey, let's try a German Riesling versus an overly oaked Chardonnay in the same flight. And then tell me what is the better wine. That doesn't make sense at all. It's like, it doesn't make sense at all. And that gives me another topic, because that drives me still nuts in the grocery stores. Because we see the wine aisles everywhere, and they are categorized by red, by white, by region, by terroir driven, by even price points. But when it comes to the water aisle, and we were just there at Ralph's yesterday, there's a Fiji there, then there's right next Dasani, then they have their own brand Ralph's Purified Water, then you see Pellegrino, then you see Evian, but they're all mixed together. It would be the same when you would go to a grocery store and tell the people in the wine selection, just mix everything up. Have champagne right next to Bordeaux, have Bordeaux right next to a German Riesling, have a German Riesling right next to a California Chardonnay, and everybody would say, are you guys nuts? Why are you not organizing your wine section? And I think it's our part, and I think, Michael, this would be an interesting topic for the Fine Water Society. Go in retail at one point and maybe hook up with Aqua Maestro, with Brett Spitalny, what we will have on the show as well at one point. And we need to, I think, educate the retailers and make them align as well to say, hey, right now, and maybe even a picture of a wine aisle completely disorganized. And this is pretty much your water aisle right now, sir. This is what your water aisle looks like for people who like to are interested in water but really don't know what's going on. And I think it needs to be separate and categorized by at least purified versus spring natural occurring source water. That's the first step. And then the next step would be then by TDS maybe, or by country of origin. But I think it's very, very important to make people more and more aware of this, that water is not just water, and that we need to... that we need to push the envelope every day. And right now at the grocery stores, at the retail, it's amazing that they have so many waters now, because in 2002, Michael, I think it was very hard to get even two or three waters in the grocery store. But now they have 10 or 15, but they're still completely disorganized because nobody knows the differences really about water. And this is kind of sad.
No, I totally agree. And again, we don't even have to do a mock-up of how this should look like. We just, you know, take some pictures from Europe where you have Eau du Monde in France having very innovative concepts of putting a rack into a supermarket that has exactly as you described it, you know, showing that waters are different from different countries, different TDS levels. So it's happening already. It's just, again, in the US, not yet.
Why do you think why the US is so behind when it comes to water?
It's the same and general answer is, again, this attitude towards food. Again, it sounds ridiculous because you and I, we both work in the hospitality industry and you work in a very fine restaurant. But I still think that many Americans are afraid of food.
Interesting, huh?
They're afraid of food. They need to read and Google what they should be eating. And you know what happens in Europe when you grow up and you eat everything and you eat little pieces of everything.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much my parents gave me everything. I'd never been asked. They always like, here, eat. Okay, mama, I will eat it. And there was no like, no. Or there was no like, oh, I don't like this. He's saying, did you ever taste it before? And when I said no, then you got to eat it. It was very simple for my parents. But I think, and I'm happy now that they did this, that they almost forced me sometimes to discover something new, because it kept my mind like thirsty. And I think we had this in the last podcast, to always saying like, why is the water zombie saying stay thirsty? He should say stay hydrated. I'm saying stay thirsty because I think you should be eager to learn something new and discover the new beauty of water. Therefore, you should be thirsty to discover the beauty of water.
And what water trends are you noticing in regions like Asia and South America, for example?
You mean with the water or the food?
With the water industry, so like bottled water consumption in general.
Martin and I have been to China many times, and we're very excited about that market because they don't have so much history with the water there and with the availability of brands. So they're starting completely new.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very excited. And in Asia, you have a very strong food culture. Really, people deeply care about the food. Yeah. I have my business partner there, and his mother is about 80 years old. And I went shopping with her. I mean, it's an unbelievable experience. Hmm. There's a big fish tank, and she touches every single mussel there. She pokes the squid. She argues with the guy, "Not, I don't want that fish. I want this fish." You know, this idea that how to engage with your food is amazing. And what you see in the U.S. here is people going to McDonald's or any other, you know, fast food place and ordering something that is a food-like substance that has basically nothing to do with food.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
And then,
yeah,
of course, have to process water with it.
Yeah, yeah. And then,
a perfect match.
Yeah, and then you're wondering why maybe you have headaches or why you're not really empowered anymore and why your muscles are always or why you're tired, because you might be don't even put enough electrolytes and minerals into your body. Because these are so essential to your life and so essential to drink. And I think a lot of people still... The argument is always, "Oh, Martin, but all the healthy minerals, I can just eat them." Yeah, but a lot of people don't eat healthy food.
Exactly.
That's a problem.
And even the World Health Organization.
So, yeah, they don't eat food, correct. This is not food even considered.
Even the World Health Organization, so they don't recommend purified water, but they did a study, and it was an animal study, where they actually gave animals adequate amount of minerals through their food, but still gave them purified water, and it resulted in these minerals leaching out of their bodies.
Crazy.
Still. So even if you have enough minerals from your regular diet, like maybe purified water can still take those away from you as well.
It's very interesting, huh?
Yeah, but obviously more research should be done on
it.
It's also, you know, we talked about, I lived in Los Angeles, and in 2006, I moved, you know, I sold my company and, you know, got sick of the traffic in LA.
I agree with you that every time.
And we moved to
this.
Texas. I live now in Texas, in a very small city about 5 miles north of the Mexican border on the Gulf. So very subtropical, think, you know, Southern Florida kind of climate.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came down here, I engaged, you know, with the community, you know, asking where's the farmer's market and all those things. And of course, there was nothing like that here. Mm. And then I read a study, which really shocked me, is that there's a 52% in my county, the people are obese, 52%. 32% are overweight. And we have children that are obese and malnourished.
I know. It's
and that's exact.
Crazy.
Can you
paradox.
Imagine that thing? The paradox is they don't eat food, right?
Yeah, exactly. Empty calories.
They're eating the empty calories. They get really big from the calories and from the sugar, but don't have the nutrients and minerals. Mm-hmm. So I know this is not a food show.
No, but it comes all together.
It comes all together because if you care about water, then I can guarantee you, you care about food.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you care about food, you should care about water, not only food and wine.
Yeah.
And that's why it brings back full circle. That's why restaurants should allow you to care about your water.
Yes. We talked about this in the last episode, in episode 2, about the three-leg concept, what I introduced, that when you have a chair and there are three legs on it, it will not wobble. And you cannot fall down with that chair because it's stable. And I think
it's a very German proverb.
Yes. Right? but I think it's the same in the restaurant business. It's food, wine, and water. These are the three legs who are working very closely together. And we will have on the future podcast as well a MasterChef on. And we will introduce different foods and different waters to see what is their angle. And I think it would be very, very interesting to talk to a MasterChef and talk about his importance of boiling water or even interacting with water and see his reaction to the different types of water. And we saw it on the last episode with the wine swimming with Stefan, how amazed he was too. It was crazy.
Yeah.
How changed just, was.
just for our listeners, you know, there might be some restaurants listening to say, I cannot afford this. How can I make money with the water? Just in 1 minute, tell them what the percentage of revenue increase was when you introduced the water menu to Rain Stocks.
400%.
Wow.
400%.
Yeah, 400% more water sales at Raisin Stark right away from the get-go. It was insane. And nobody was thinking this. And I have to say, and thank you, Michael, for bringing that up, because I had to fight very hard for my water menu at the Batina Restaurant Group, because our purchasing officer at that moment, he's not with the company anymore, but actually I like him. He's a good guy. But he said, Martin, trust me, I live in America since I was born. I'm American. Nobody will pay for bottled water. Everybody will drink tap water. So you don't need to even think about this whole concept. It will be very expensive to bring all the waters in, the inventory even. Then this we have to print this whole water menu. This is all cost just like it literally will pull down the drain. He's thinking, no, I don't think so, because I knew the concept was working in Germany very well. And we got so much media attention on this. You see, let's try this at least, guys. Mm-hmm. Let's try. Let's be open-minded to something new. So we launched this at Raisin Stark Bar in the beginning. And we put a press release up on the second day. And on the third day, I was on 4 TV shows. And I had no clue what's going on. Wow. Because for me, it was like, I created a water menu before, exactly. And it's not really a big deal for me, because I just want to give a healthy option to my guest. That is the whole point why I created water menus. I want to give an option to people who maybe don't want to drink for health reasons, like Michael, for reasons as religious reasons maybe, where they're saying like, you know what, as religious reasons, I don't want to drink any alcohol, that's totally fine. Then for some people who saying not even the doctor said I had to stop, just like, no, I like to be hydrated. I'm not interested really in drinking alcohol. Or for people who like to be sober and are the designated drivers. So they feel excluded as well in restaurants, a lot of restaurants. And they
makes
have
sense,
to...
But what drives me nuts is that restaurants say, I cannot afford it. And you have the proof that they can increase their sales by 400%.
Yes.
So again, I'm baffled how stupid restaurants are and why they're not doing. So number one. Number two is, you mentioned the Patina thing. Patina is a very high-end restaurant in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So they nickel and dime you for the bottled water. So do they do the same thing now with the food? I know they don't, but I have the perception, if I go to a place like this where my only choice is, you know, San Pellegrino and Panna, is, you know, what about the fish? Is this really the top shelf fish, or is this something that was a little bit cheaper but almost as good and almost perfect? So it bleeds into this whole idea that the chef needs to care about the food, the wine, and the water.
Yeah.
And I have to feel, I've done many tastings, and you have done this too, many tastings where I have now chefs on the table. And I think the chefs are very easy to convince. I think the problem right now with the restaurants is probably the management of the restaurants, the purchasing people, and maybe the fact that very few individual restaurants exist anymore, right? They're all becoming part of a big group or something.
Correct. But there's like a silver thread on this guy, I think, because I know that Disney, for example, has a water menu on their cruise ships. So there are bigger corporations who think, okay, this is actually a nice treat and we want to do this and we want to push it. And there's a restaurant here in Los Angeles who opened a French small little restaurant in Santa Monica, and they launched a big water menu. So I was very eager. I never heard. They never reached out to me. What I think was a little weird that, like, okay, you're creating a water menu with a water concept and it's called Water Bar in Santa Monica, but you never talk to the water someone who's actually right in front of you. I thought, like, okay, why not? It's like, I'm just moving over there and I just wanted to test it out for myself.
Yeah.
And I had a feeling that this whole thing was a little PR scam thing.
Huh.
Because I went there, they had these beautiful bottles on the shelves, what you have as well in the background there, Michael. I adore this.
Oh, yeah.
Our little water closet here behind me is like nothing against your selection, what you have there. And I went there, and they gave me the water. First of all, they didn't give me the water menu. I asked them, you think, I heard you have a water menu here. Oh, yeah, you have this water menu. So, okay, the server gave me the water menu. And then I looked at the water menu, nicely done, it was totally fine.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at both pages, they had around 40 different waters, what they claimed to have. And then I started to order the first waters. Oh, I'm out of this, 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 I'm out of this. So they actually had, I think, 6 waters at one point.
Oh, wow.
And then I said, okay, great. So, and then I said to the server, so, okay, I have like this 2 different waters. Can you tell me a little bit about it? And he looked at me like, what does this idiot want from me? Like, literally, like, you could feel he was like so like, oh my God, now this freak here.
That's unfortunate.
Who want to ask about water. And like, he literally like, I gave him the ball. It's like, I'm always saying it's like a soccer or like a football game. I'm giving the ball to you. And he literally not was playing with this ball. He was just like heading a knife, putting a big hole into this ball. And this whole thing blowed up in my face. Huh? And then done the conversation. He was like, do you know what? I don't care. And I asked him, so who came up with this water menu? Yeah, somebody from our manager, I think. So they had no clue what they actually had. And that is a problem again. Creating a water menu, and for people who maybe are interested to create water menus around the world, please do. But that means it's the same with like a computer. When you have a great computer, you need great software.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same in a restaurant. When you're building an amazing restaurant, you have a great software. That means you have to have good staff. And you need to train your staff. And when you're creating a water menu, what I think is a great thing, and I would love to see a water menu in every single restaurant, because I believe every single restaurant should give you an option about the most healthiest mm-hmm. beverage on this planet. It doesn't need to be 20, what we have at Patina. It doesn't need to be 40, what La Pergola has in Rome, a Michelin star restaurant. But maybe 2 or 3 at least.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Give me an option mm-hmm. on the most important beverage in our lives, guys. Give me an option. Mm-hmm. But please, when you're creating a water menu, and I think Michael is more than happy to help, I'm more than happy to help, guys. But please reach out to us, and then we will talk about it, and we can train your people. And that is the biggest, biggest, biggest important. Because when you don't train your staff, it will not work, the concept. Because these are your salespeople, and they need to know why they have a water menu. It's the same with wine, absolutely. The same with liquor, the same with beer. When you're going to a sports bar and you're going in there and you're saying, okay, which beer you have on tap for the bartender, and the bartender say, I don't care. You will say like, what is this for a joke here? What is this for a joke? Water is the same. It's for me exactly the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's again like with everything in life, you know, if you do something, do it properly and show some passion.
Yeah.
Don't do it just as a PR stunt,
yeah.
Because you know it's gonna blow up in your face. But I want to come back to the.
Yeah, it will backfire you. It will backfire.
It will totally backfire. But let me come back to this chef idea.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, I was very fortunate to have a water tasting presentation with chefs. So I talked with the chef before. We created a menu, and we had a couple of other chefs in the audience, and we tasted different waters with the food, and we also had wine with it. You know, the organizers insisted that there should be some wine. We cannot have a food without wine. This kind of concept, and after the first sip of the food and the wine.
Mm.
And the water, the chefs immediately said, wow, wouldn't it be nice if the people would not drink wine with mm-hmm. my food? And I was amazed. Because what they said is, you know, the wine is nice and all the good thing, but if you consider it still distracts a little mm-hmm. bit or sometimes a lot from the food.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I had this epiphany because we all know Peter Svenningsen, the chocolate maker.
Yes, yes.
And it's a fantastic story. And I realized he's doing the same thing. So for your listeners, you know, chocolate is usually made with milk and cream.
Mm.
And that is nice, but it dilutes the essence of the chocolate and makes it a little bit more muddy, a little bit more cloudy. And he developed a very unique technique to use water, actually high-end premium waters, different waters to make chocolate.
Yeah.
And you eat some of his piece of
cream.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm. And you eat a piece of his chocolate and you taste the chocolate.
Yeah.
There's not this cloud of cream that covers the chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And when the chef told me he would love to have his audience taste the food without the wine, I was thinking maybe in some instances it would be nice to have a water pairing designed by the chef to really focus on the food. Mm-hmm. And the water allows that instead of being a little bit clouded with the wine around it. So I think that would be a fantastic concept for a chef.
Yeah. No, it's great. And going back to Peter Svenningsen, he's now a very close friend. And I was with Jan Bender in Copenhagen. So Jan Bender, the owner of Riskilde, in September. And we visit Sven.
Right, yeah.
And it was for me unbelievable what he does. And there's a video, I think, on YouTube. I put it on YouTube. It's like a 30-minute video where Jan Bender, myself, and Peter Svenningsen talking about all the different chocolates. And you can see how he creates his chocolates based on the different waters. And they are mind-blowing. They're literally mind-blowing. And you can taste out, even out of the chocolate, they have they have one chocolate praliné made with Roy water. Uh-huh. And you can taste out right away the Roy.
Wow.
It's so clearly right there. And it's, for me, it was fascinating. And we will have definitely Peter Svenningsen on the podcast as well, because I think it would be very interesting to interview him to talk about his chocolates, first of all. And he's not like that, he's like a guy who likes to eat chocolates and he creates some chocolates. No, he wins one competition after another worldwide right now. So he's a very, very passionate guy about his chocolates, and his chocolates are incredible. Hmm. When you taste for the first time his chocolates, it has nothing to do with regular creamy pralines anymore, what you ever thought about it. Because the intensity, what you said, Michael, I completely agree with you. They are so interesting and so intense and so powerful, his chocolates, because the water is really helping and growing the chocolate by himself. And it's not this cloudy away. I love that concept, what wine can do sometimes when you have the wrong wine in your glass and the kitchen's trying something and it's not really fitting together, then it can be a very bad experience. And by water can really grow and help flavors to even grow in your mouth. And this was what we saw at the wine pairing with the Grauburgunder and the Skilde, that we all were blown away after we were drinking a Skilde, that we still could taste the whole flavor of the wine. It was not neutralizing it. No, it was actually growing in your palate, and it was even giving you a new level of taste. And this was, for me, fascinating, like literally fascinating.
It really is. And you mentioned the disconnect sometimes between the wine and the food. And you probably know in the restaurant, you know, you start with the whites and you go up the reds. Yep. And then the last thing is the big, bold red, right?
Yes.
And then comes the cheese. And most people continue drinking the big red wine.
Yeah,
with the
terrible.
Cheese.
I hate this.
And they have some goat cheese there. And it's stupid. It completely destroys the cheese and the wine.
Yes.
And it's really interesting. I've done a lot of tastings with different cheeses, and especially not naturally carbonated water with a higher TDS. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful, beautiful match. So again, in a restaurant, the waiter should recommend, you know, guys, stop with the red, with your duck or whatever you have, and then go to two naturally carbonated water here, four cheeses. They fit nicely. And then go to your port for the dessert or whatever.
A sweet wine or dessert wine or something like that. Yeah,
exactly.
I like this.
But put that thing in between and let people relax a little bit and have a new experience. You know?
Yeah, and discover the beauty.
Yeah, new experiences. I go to a restaurant not to get calories. I go there to have a nice experience. And if a restaurant shows me new things, I remember that. I recommend it. I maybe even, you know, Instagram about it. Look, I'm eating cheese and I have those different waters.
Oh, we see this at Patina right now. We're getting more traction on our posts, or like people taking more pictures of the water menu than the wine menu. Obviously. And I think it has two ways, because it's still something like so out of the box for a lot of people. What I still think, like, okay, I'm doing this, but that's like the same what the press always telling me. Oh, there's just one water sommelier on the world. I think, no, there are hundreds. There are hundreds of water sommeliers around this world. And I met through Michael now amazing water sommeliers from around the world. And it's so fun to talk to them. And it's fascinating for me to share my knowledge, to share their knowledge, and that I can grow my knowledge too. And it's very interesting, the different markets, how they are reacting to waters. Like China is totally different than the States. Europe obviously is a totally different standpoint, because they're a little bit far ahead of the game when it comes to water pairings, water menus, and water sommeliers, because most of the schools are in Europe. Three schools are in Europe. We have one school in South Korea and one now in China. and hopefully Michael and I, because we're getting more and more interview requests for Martin, how can I become a water sommelier? And I think
we need to
build a certification program here in the States for people who are very interested in it. And I think why not doing this with the Fine Water Society, because this is already a reliable and amazing organization where people have a lot of knowledge. And the big thing, what divides us from other maybe organizations when it becomes to the bottled water industry, we are not really connected to any like big corporations. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we're pretty much we are still the small guys and yeah. we can adjust to the market very fast. And I like this.
But sometimes the small guys win. I just want to add one thing when you said that people Instagram more about the water than the wine. I do the same thing. You know, I go to a fancy party and people bring the $100, $200 Bordeaux, right? Mm-hmm. And I bring a bottle of Svalbard iceberg water. I tell people this is iceberg 5,000 years old and just was harvested, came here.
Yeah.
And no one talks about the $200 Bordeaux.
No. Sure, because it's so interesting. They're all like, wow, what is this?
What is this? And they want to have the bottle. Can I take the bottle home? And all those kind of things. Yeah. So I think we're starting to see that, but I think some brands and some people in the industry are still timid. They still think it's just water. Even so, they have a good water. They don't feel comfortable of going out there and saying, you know, guys, this is much cooler than the other thing. You know, look what this storytelling around the water.
Correct.
And you're in Los Angeles, and I've been criticized harshly for it, but I love bling. I love bling. I love it. I love the idea of bling. And in my former life, I'm an anthropologist, and I'm thinking there's some archaeology going on in 20,000 years, and they find a bottle of bling, and they try to connect it, you know, which area of the world could that have probably developed?
Yeah.
And it would only take them 2 minutes to figure out it's either Miami Beach or Los Angeles, right?
So for people who may be not familiar with bling, bling comes from Tennessee, and it has beautiful Swarovski crystals on the bottle. Hmm. I had it at my restaurant in Germany, and I have to say, I sold it mostly to Russian guests. So, and this bottle was not sorting by himself. So when I saw, okay, we have like the typical people who look for the most expensive stuff, and you could see like they came with the Gucci bags and they came maybe already with a Swarovski crystal bag even to the restaurant. I was just like grabbing that bling water bottle out of my fridge and I just walked by the table. And trust me, gentlemen, come over here. Huh? And then like, okay, what do you have there? He's saying, okay, this is bling. This is like, I think we charge $100 for it back in the days, or 100 euros in Germany on my water menu. And he looked at me and said, what is this? Swarovski crystals, Tennessee water. Oh, interesting. You open one and one to go. It worked all the time. It worked all the time.
Wow. It's fascinating. And for me, the story behind this, that the water has terroir, you know, the wine word, you know, I think we don't need to explain it for the viewers here, but I think water can have terroir, but I also think that the bottle needs to have terroir. Mm. And for me, bling, the bottle has terroir. And it's, of course, outlandish, but it's Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
So those two, so the bottle has terroir. And I have here, you know, while we are talking, I'm drinking, and I'm drinking Antipodes in the small 500 ml.
Beautiful water,
beautiful bottle. And this bottle also has terroir. But this is New Zealand in the late 1880s. They had many different shapes for wine, for their local beer. And one of the shapes was this bottle. So if you look at this bottle and you put it next to the bottle from 1880, you can see there's a connection.
There's a connection.
So this bottle has terroir and bling has terroir.
Yes.
They're just very different.
Yeah. The same with Roy. The Roy water bottle is a very, very old bottle originally. What is for me fascinating, and I think Michael is grabbing it right now. Yeah, I see him right now grabbing Roy, that our viewers who are following us on YouTube, because people maybe still don't know, the podcast, guys, it's not just on iTunes, it is on SoundCloud and Google Play, but as well on YouTube. You can see then the video, and Michael is showcasing right now the Roy. It's an incredible bottle, and I have it here in the back as well. Yeah, let's see.
Look at that. You can see
you have it
there. Here we go. I have it in there. Here as well for everybody who likes to see Roy. I have it here in the picture. I'm a big fan of Roy. I love the story of Roy. They're doing a big relaunch right now in Dubai. And we will definitely connect to the Roy people, because I think we should revisit Roy at one point, and we would love to have the people behind Roy here on the show as well.
No, and I've been to the source there. It's really, really fascinating, because it's a very, very old spa town.
Yeah.
And it's really, you've probably noticed I'm drinking water from a very fancy glass. Mm-hmm. Remember the story when we talked about the kind of the cling
in the restaurant? I have the glass here as well, right in front of me.
So I designed this glass, this water glass, because I wanted to have a proud glass. So it's a little bit taller than the red wine glass from the Riedel Vinum series, because I wanted to have the tallest glass on the table.
Selfish, huh? Hey, here we go, huh? Somebody's selfish again, right. Michael, huh?
But it also turns out that everyone in China wants to have a tall glass, so it's all pretty well.
What is this about now? Is there something else to compensate?
But the really interesting idea is that this glass was actually handmade, hand-blown. It's very expensive. It costs about $80 a glass.
Oh my God! I will hand wash it now every day.
But it's the same. It's the same as a Riedel sommelier, right? You take a black tie sommelier. It's the same price. And why should they have more expensive glasses than we do in the water?
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say is that there was this spa for Roy, and people came there and to get, you know, cured. And what they got cured from is not drinking the water in the city back then. So this must be the main part of the cure. And they wanted to take the water home with them, but there were no containers. So they started a glass company in 1611.
Amazing.
Next to the sewers. And this glass here is actually made 500 meters from the source of Roy.
Oh, that's great. I love this.
And the reason the glass company is there is because people came to the source of Roy.
Look at this.
It's stories, right? This is those are stories. This is what people, and for me, drinking water is the emotional connection from where you are to the source. Mm. And a good brand allows you to make that emotional connection.
Yeah. No, this is great. I love these stories. And this is always what I think the guest eager to hear in the restaurant at Patina. And even when I'm getting interviewed, the media is always very interesting. Like, so tell me why water has taste. And then I'm always telling you it's about the terroir. And then you start to tell the story about the different springs. And people start to get very, very fascinating suddenly, because they all think, oh, it just comes from some factory.
Yeah.
And when you think then again, purified water does not really have a story. Because it's not really fun for a purified water company to tell us, oh yeah, we're taking municipal sourced Montebello water from Los Angeles, what's already very highly processed. Mm-hmm. Then we're processing it again because we're getting rid of everything. Yeah. So this is now double processed, completely dead water at that moment. Then we're adding back some very small amount of electrolytes. We're putting it in a very cheap plastic bottle and selling it for a price at the 99-cent store.
Yeah.
So do you really think that this water is not the best water on this planet? Do you really think that this water has the same value than a Roy or a Svalbardi, what has hundreds of years tradition behind that water, that people even went to the springs because they were fascinated about the springs to taste the differences in that spring and even the health benefit on the springs? And I think this is like what people still are legal, like what you said, Michael, as well. Like they all think like, oh, it's just water. And I hate this just. Just drives me nuts by water because, oh, it's just water. Oh, just your life. Oh, just our planet. Yeah. We all know, huh? Global warming. It's a fact. I don't know who else is really argumenting on this. I know.
No some, politics, please. Yeah,
no politics, but it's for me fascinating. It's fascinating for me.
I live in Texas.
Yeah. But it's for me still fascinating that people really are so ignored and going through their lives to ignore everything. And yes, we all know water has value and water should have value. And when people are saying, oh, Martin, but we all know this video about $100,000 water what I opened for GQ magazine. 10 million people watched that movie. And a lot of people said like, oh, this is ridiculous. I would never pay $100,000 for a bottle of water. Okay, let's think about this and say, okay, when you are now in the desert and you're there with a suitcase with $100,000 and there's a bottle of water right in front of you and you have the choice. You're going to die or you're buying $500,000 of the water and you will survive. What are you going to do? So I want to see the person who will say, I want to save the $100,000 and I will not hydrate myself to survive on this planet. So I want to see this. So that's the reason why sometimes maybe it's crazy that we're talking about $100,000 water. But yes, water has value. Do I really want to spend $100,000 for water? It's all relative for the money, obviously, what you make privately. And I understand water should be a human right. And I'm not agreeing with water should be expensive or water needs to be exclusive to people. I strongly believe, and I know Michael and Chance does the same, we all believe that water is a human right and water should be accessible to everybody on this planet. That doesn't mean that bottled water is wrong. And this is like, I think what people need to understand as well. And we're living in Los Angeles. Trust me, when suddenly there will be maybe a big problem here for earthquake or something, we need bottled water at that moment. It's very important that to have bottled water at that moment because maybe the municipal sourced water will be not available at that moment. So I think bottled water is extremely important.
Yes, Martin, I have an example for you. So you are in the desert. You don't have a suitcase with $100,000, but you only have a bottle of smart water.
That's a tough question, huh? That's a tough question. Yeah. And I have to say, I never bought in my whole life a bottle of smart water. I never bought in my whole life a bottle of smart water. But yes, absolutely. And I will say it right here. When it's like the devil eats flies, huh? Or something like this. There's a saying. So yes, I will drink then smart water. I might be not enjoying it, but it will help me somehow to survive. Yes, the water model, somebody said this. So please, Coca-Cola, you can use it now in your PR that the water somebody will drink smart water when it's really hardcore.
But see, it's the same thing. You know, when I had to stop drinking the alcohol, it's not a choice, right? At this point, it's not a choice you have.
Yeah.
It's absolutely clear. So I don't think no one will hold it against you. I would just be careful if you're on a sidewalk and you want to cross the street and you see a car that's labeled smart water, I would stay on the
sidewalk. Yeah, I have to be careful. Huh? No, this is great. This is great. Wonderful, Michael. No, this was super interesting. We are over an hour already, so... It was fascinating for me to talk to you, Michael. And I think because there's so many more questions, I think people would have. Mm-hmm. And I eager everybody who listened into the Planet Water podcast, please send us your questions into obviously planetwaterpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can send it into the Fine Water. What is your email address, Michael?
Michael@finewaters.com.
Okay, so please send Michael an email to michael@finewaters.com. He's more than happy to answer all your questions too.
And or Instagram is also Fine Waters or Facebook Fine Waters.
That's great. I love this. And there's one more thing. I'm repeating myself like... Because we had this one more thing last time.
One more thing.
We wanted to talk actually about something with Michael. What you have a little hobby, I think, and I see a beautiful picture right behind you of a beautiful painting, and it's water related, I think, your hobby, because obviously we both like to drink, but we are very artistic people, Michael and myself too, and I think Chance as well. So please share a little bit. What is the story behind your artistic feelings?
I'm doing photography now for, you know, the longest part of my life. And, you know, I'm not doing children or dogs. I'm doing artistic nudes, you know, the very classic, you know, tradition of artistic nudes. And when I discovered the water, I was really fascinated. And one of the series I've worked on, it's called Mermaids, and it's really taking artistic nudes in the water. Oh, because if you shoot people, I mean, take pictures of people, you know what I mean by shooting people. If you shoot people on land, we have that thing called gravity, right?
Yes.
and all your poses are limited or defined by gravity. And it becomes really, really interesting if you move that whole equation into the water, underwater, and playing on the surfaces, because you have gravity doesn't exist anymore.
Correct.
And you have that kind of really, really interesting blues. So I think I sent you a link for some of my work there.
And we have it. We have it up, the link. So you're in one page, and we have your link up with fineartnotes.org. And I think it's fascinating, the pictures. I love this. Hopefully YouTube will not say we cannot show this on YouTube. They're very blurry, so I don't think that we have problems. And we are on the mermaids right now. Sorry, Michael, that you cannot really see this. But I'm fascinating about the concept here. It's very, very nicely done. That is beautiful. Nice. Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. We love this. So I think, Michael, we need to have you back on the show. And I think the FaceTime just stopped with Michael. I'm so sorry. Sometimes the technology obviously doesn't hold up. We're trying to... Yeah. So Michael is gone. I'm so sorry. We wanted to say goodbye to him as well, but we're saying it right here now on the podcast. Thank you so much, Michael, for being here on the show. FaceTime just stopped for a second, so Michael is gone. But we're showcasing the beautiful Michael Mascher, fineartnudes.org, as well. Homepage right now on our screen. You should check him out at finewaters.com. And obviously, Chance, we're both having little technical issues again. Because
a lot tonight.
Because our lights went out here in the studio. Huh? Oh, it's I don't know what happened. Hopefully the cameras will made it. But the lights are out again. It's always nice to have everybody here at the Planet Water podcast. And I think to the end, what we're always doing, we need to say our little goodbye song. Thanks again for everybody to listening in to Chance and myself. See you in episode 4.
Have a good one, guys.
Thank you, guys, and stay thirsty.
Water is not just water.